Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Spirit Fire Radio and a brand new month. My name is Steve Kramer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve. Glad to be here.
Yes, we endeavor upon a brand new topic, cooperation. So, listeners, every month we have a new topic, and we are going to discuss cooperation for the entire month of November. Looking forward to it, right, Dorothy?
Absolutely.
Yes. Cooperation, so important. What's interesting that I wanted to mention is we started this season of the radio show in May. And so we're on our seventh topic, and we've been doing this for since the beginning of the seventh month of this season. And the number seven is a really sort of auspicious number. So, Dorothy, if you don't mind for a second, I'd just like to mention that, you know, why that's so important.
Absolutely. Go for it.
Cool. Well, you know, we've referenced quite a bit, a book that you have written called Principles of Abundance for the Cosmic Citizen. Really, such wonderful fodder, and it really led us toward deciding to spend a month on each one of these topics. And there are seven principles, and I would say, you could say yes or no, conscious or unconscious, that seven, there's a reason there are seven principles. These are principles that underlie our reality, and we've been talking about them for the last 7 months. So seven. If you think about what comes in sevens, it's really like a culmination. It's a synthesis, the fullness of cooperative parts in making the whole. Now, that sounds like, well, what are you talking about? Well, think about it. There are 7 days to a week, right? And if we look mm-hmm. at a rainbow, if we look at the color white, it can be broken down into seven or put, you know, spread apart to seven specific colors of the spectrum. Roy G. Biv, right? If you think of musical notes, there are seven notes to a musical scale. If the esotericists who are listening, my goodness, the number seven is everywhere. We've talked about the seven rays. We're going to talk about them quite a bit in the next upcoming months. There's seven classical planets or luminaries. Those of you who practice energy medicine, you'll know there's seven chakras. There's seven endocrine glands that relate to those chakras. So the number seven really talks about the way in which various parts create the whole. So I think it's interesting that we're on talking about cooperation this month on month number seven, and that there are seven principles, because if we look at those principles, interconnectivity, participation, non-linearity, non-duality, interdependence, adaptability, with each one of those, if we learn to cooperate with these principles, or if we learn a bit about these principles and spend time in integrating them into our lives seamlessly with ease, we'll find that we're cooperating with life itself, that we become a cooperative component. Does that make sense to you, Dorothy?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, very interesting. I even think of an interconnectivity, you know, just that word connection, it implies cooperation, right? And participation, that we create our own reality. The creative act is cooperative. So all through the principles that we've talked about, cooperation is there. Or if one would learn to cooperate, not resist these principles because they're factual, then our life is just can be quite meaningful and productive. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very well said.
I'm just wondering, did coming up with seven, was the number important to you, or did it just so happen?
No, it was intentional, and in relation to exactly what you've been talking about. For me, there's an energetic, esoteric underlay to the principles themselves, and I think, you know, when we talk about the rays a little bit later in this year, the whole concept of the rays, for people that are not familiar with it, is that the energy of the universe expresses itself in seven different ways, or seven different vibrations, and that's what the seven rays are about. And so if you think about the energetically what's associated with those, you can match it actually pretty directly to the seven principles.
Beautiful. So we're really then, you know, I know a thing or two about the rays. You know, the seventh ray is quite a bit about synthesis. So I think this whole month, in very practical ways, we're going to talk about synthesis in ways that when we work together, when we learn to be cooperative, we actually create something new, which is really the process of evolution.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Should we start?
I've got a couple of quotes, Steve, perfect, that would support that.
Perfect.
Okay. So from Bertrand Russell, he wrote, "The only thing that will redeem humanity is cooperation," which I think is really interesting. And then Roosevelt, FDR, wrote, "Competition has been shown to be useful up to a certain point and no further. But cooperation, which is the thing we must strive for today, begins where competition leaves off." I'm not sure that we actually have to have competition in order to get to cooperation, but certainly cooperation is superordinate, if you will. It supersedes competition in terms of how it is that we are able to live productive and meaningful lives. And if you think about it, Steve, it's the process of working together, right, towards the common good. We've talked about the common good before, but it's the whole idea that and I was listening to a radio program where this was being talked about, that, you know, what we really want to strive for in our life is to work for something that is bigger than ourselves, that's more than ourselves. It's not just our own personal self-interest. And we refer to that as the common good when we're thinking of it as solutions or ways of being that work well for everyone, or at least almost everyone.
Beautifully put. It takes me back, not to be a bit of a naysayer, but it takes me back to that to the FDR quote about, you know, competition being useful to a point. And because we also can see cooperation, people cooperating in a group that then perhaps doesn't have the most common good at heart. For instance, you know, we all had election day yesterday in America, and we heard so much about voter suppression, and that being, you know, it's cooperative in a sense that there are groups cooperating, but really there is competition behind the you know, the notion of cooperating. We're going to cooperate to bring about this suppression, which isn't for the common good. So we would hope that, you know, once we understand our interconnectivity, our interdependence, that one would see that, you know, competition really can be quite harmful. And the reason we would move beyond that toward cooperation is because it would be for the greater good, you know, greater good of all.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting to think about models that combine the two. If you think about a sports team, a sports team only works well if players cooperate with each other.
Yes.
However, they cooperate in order to compete with another team, right? So they're operating in a field of competition, which can be, if you will, clean competition, or it can be a very negative, you know, with the intention to harm, the intention to humiliate, the intention to do in the other side.
I think it's what I love about the Olympics so much, because there is competition, but it really does seem to be honoring the sport itself and human achievement. So it seems that there's a bigger picture that is acknowledged within that competition. But boy, you know, watch college football and forget it.
Which is a lot
of times it ends up in violence too. That competition gets so heated, right? Yeah.
Well, and the here in Canada, there's been interesting discussions around hockey, which is a very important national sport here. And it's interesting that European hockey teams play in such a way that they have eliminated the violence in the game, right? Whereas in Canada, there's still a large portion of the sports community that seem to think that really the main goal of hockey is to damage or injure the other party as much as possible. So you can have a very different philosophy depending upon what you want the outcome to be. And it's interesting to me, you know, you mentioned the Olympics. It's so heartwarming when you see individuals or teams compete strenuously with each other, really pushing themselves, you know, to do their very best, and then being able to sincerely congratulate somebody who succeeds in being faster or stronger or whatever than they were.
Yes, it is. It is a really beautiful thing. I also think of our democracy. I can't help but think about voting. You know, this week, it's certainly on all of our minds. But this idea of democracy and having faith in democracy. Still, you are voting perhaps for one candidate, but can you also respect the process? Feel good about the process? You know, I find that. It is always about the bigger picture. It's about zooming out to see the bigger picture and knowing that if your candidate might not win, well, you rest assured that the larger group is choosing another way. And can you still be cooperative within that?
Well, and we see this in many different arenas, you know, where there are decisions made where not everybody in the group is in 100% agreement. In fact, I think it's fairly rare to find times when people are in 100% agreement because they come from different perspectives. And I think we're going to talk about this a lot this month, Steve, but you know, part of the key to cooperation is respect, that somebody else can see things differently than you. And part of the purpose of having the common good as the goal, as opposed to your way, you know, my way or the highway kind of thing, is to say, okay, this is important to me, and I respect that this other is important to you. Now, can we come up with a solution? Can we work together in a way such that both of our needs are met, or both of our needs are honored? And that's a lot of what, you know, any of our listeners that are involved professionally in the process of negotiation, that's a lot of what successful negotiation is about, is that getting to yes, getting to a solution that both parties can embrace and support. Because otherwise what happens is if one party wins and suppresses the other party, eventually that other party is going to rise up and fight back. And you just have this continual battle back and forth, as opposed to having actually reached a resolution that everybody can feel good about.
Beautiful. Sounds beautiful. Dorothy, at the moment, well, we have to cooperate and go to a break.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. We'll be right back. We're going to continue this great discussion on cooperation after these words.
Stay juicy. Tune in to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake, co-hosting monthly with Dr. Pat, and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio.
My show, Your Juicy Love, helps you find the dynamic, life-affirming love you've always wanted. Transform your relationships and bring peace, joy, and juicy, juicy love to planet Earth. For more information, visit unadrake.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to Spirit Fire Radio. We are talking this entire month about cooperation. Understanding cooperation as a concept, that's what we're talking about on this show in particular. And Dorothy, we have exercised our cooperative skills all season in that Spirit Fire Radio is a collaboration between two organizations, between Spirit Fire and the School for Esoteric Studies. And it's been a wonderful creative process. And, I think everybody should join in a co-creative project. Really, it's a wonderful, wonderful experience. But let's just take a moment and talk about the two organizations. Dorothy, you first.
Okay. But I'd like to take just a second to build on what you just said, Steve, because I think that this collaboration is an illustration of, I mean, if we use the term collaboration to be a cooperation that's working towards creating something in particular. And what makes rich, and one of the reasons why cooperation is so important, is that your organization and my organization, while we share some commonalities, we also have some differences in our focus. And you and I have some differences in our backgrounds and in our perspectives. And my goodness, that's so much richer than just each of us talking to somebody who was a clone and was exactly the same as them in terms of everything that they thought, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And what's beautiful about that process, not only beautiful to get to know somebody and get to know their complexities, which is, you know, I love that. But we get to know ourselves as well. You know, we get to know our shortcomings and we get to work on those. And if we've got a mutual respect and a mutual understanding, we come together in any collaboration. You know, just as human beings, we've got personalities and they will inevitably be different. And when we learn to use them as a vehicle to work towards something creative and positive, it can only help us evolve. And only add good things to the creative project itself. So indeed, it's been a wonderful experience.
So building on that, the School for Esoteric Studies, which is the organization that I represent, we are an educational nonprofit, just as is Spirit Fire. And we provide training for persons who already have a spiritual practice that they want to deepen. And you can find out more about our training process at esotericstudies.net. And part of how this cooperation came about was that we recognized as an organization a couple of years ago that we could enrich what we were contributing to the world if we actively sought out other like-minded organizations with a slightly different focus, where we could have collaboration. And so you'll find on our website at esotericstudies.net a description of the intergroup collaborations that we have already. And we invite you, if any of you listeners are involved with organizations that are interested in collaborating with the School for Esoteric Studies, please do so. I just want to add one other note, Steve, which is one of the initiatives that we have launched that we would love to collaborate with others on is a series of white papers called Inclusive Social Action. And what we have the first paper up. You can find it at esotericstudies.net. And what we are addressing is the issue of how one deals with harmful activities that are occurring without standing up and saying this is not acceptable, and doing it in a way that doesn't create further divisiveness. It's, I think, very challenging for our community, And so we have a series of three that we're going to be publishing. The first one is up. Please take a look at it. Please write to us with any thoughts and comments that you have. We've already heard from organizations in several different countries that want to move forward in working on this issue together. So please join us in this initiative.
Wonderful. And again, Dorothy, if they go to schoolforesotericstudies.net, they can search for those.
No, esotericstudies.net.
And then they can find that on the website just by searching.
Yeah, it's right on the homepage. Is the notice of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And such wonderful information on that website. Listeners, for sure, check it out. And what a wonderful initiative. Certainly, we see that so much, the need. We see the need for it, but we also see lots of groups and organizations collaborating, cooperating to try to find a way to stand up and say no, as you say, without that divisiveness, that resistance that becomes a force that forces another down. So it becomes a pushback, but that it's more about solutions, you know. So how wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So Spirit Fire, we're also an educational nonprofit. We've got a retreat center in Western Massachusetts. Meditation, study, and service are three principles that guide Spirit Fire. We've got our own meditation practice called the Practice of Living Awareness, an online meditation program. You can find out more about that at spiritfire.com. Visit our center for lovely meditation retreats, and we've also got online courses on the website as well. So, Dorothy, yeah, let's move on. Spiritfire.com. Did I say that? I'm ready to move on to cooperation. Me cooperating with my own mind. That's always a good challenge.
Well, Steve, one of the distinctions that I think can be helpful is to think of the distinction between cooperation and compliance. So, cooperation implies an egalitarianism, right? That we believe that everyone is equal, that they have equal rights, that their perspectives, that their concerns are all valid. We may not agree with them, but they need to be taken into account. Whereas compliance is when we respond or submit to the influence of someone else. So we just say, okay, yeah, you're telling me to do this, I'll do it. Which doesn't do anything about actually listening to and honoring the perspectives of all parties.
And that word egalitarian, would you define that, put it in words?
Well, I thought I just did. It's the...
I wanted you to say more.
Egalitarian is the concept, the commitment to the fact that everyone is created equal. Everyone is created with equal rights. Everyone is created. I mean, this is what the Universal Declaration of Human Rights of the United Nations is about, that everyone deserves respect and deserves to be treated with dignity.
Well, and I only bring that up because when we think about complying and cooperating, even last night I was watching a movie where within the storyline there was an authority figure, and a father and a daughter, and these authority figures were saying, you know, please come with me. And they took the father away, and he looked at his daughter and said, cooperate. Please cooperate with them. We have done nothing wrong. Just cooperate. Everything will be okay. And he meant it, and it was the truth, and they were going to cooperate. But you could see that in a sense that if he had said comply, you know,
would be more accurate, right?
Yeah. Well, I think he was actually asking for her to respect them, to not see them as imposing their will upon her, but saying they are just doing their job, cooperate with them. And one would expect, because it is egalitarian, that you would be respected back. Correct. So as you know, whereas if we were to comply, then there's this idea of, you know, if you don't comply exactly as I wish, you will then, you know, receive the, you know, then you'll have a price to pay for that. So it's just a very interesting, I find it a very interesting comparison, those two words, cooperation and compliance. You know, we've got such issues today with authority. I even think of police. My goodness, when I was a kid, you loved to see a policeman. They were like the fun guy that protected your community. Not that they aren't anymore, but we have created this almost illusion that at times, you know, there's danger or we've got to film everything. And I love that idea of cooperation as egalitarian and knowing that figures of authority are times when we're asked to cooperate in those sort of situations, that we trust that the goodness of the request is in their heart as well, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things that allows us to cooperate, particularly on a large scale, is language. I mean, we sometimes forget that is a facilitator or a mediator of the ability to cooperate. And one of the things I know I have to be careful of, and I've seen, you know, articles written about this, is that when we use a medium like email a lot, we may be so cryptic in the way that we communicate, and texting can be the same thing, that we leave out some of the nuances, some of the complexities that are important in order to ensure that somebody understands where we're coming from and that we are communicating clearly the respect that we have for the other. Mm,
beautiful. Well, in that we are communicating at all, you know, communication is such a bridge. You know, we've got mm-hmm. to communicate. We've got to talk. That is how we start to learn about each other. And we learn to cooperate with those mm-hmm. who may be different than us, but see ways in which we are similar. There was mm-hmm. There's a wonderful organization, Karuna Center, locally, that's near Spirit Fire. And they got behind this project called Hands Across the Hills. And it was an organization that was bringing basically very leftist Democrats with very rightist Republicans, and the Democrats were from Leverett, Massachusetts, which is local here, and the Republicans from Kentucky, and bringing them together to have dialogue so that they could start to understand the differences and come to understand each other as human beings so that they could mm-hmm. learn to cooperate as Americans. You know, mm-hmm. they certainly are on different sides of the political spectrum, but there's levels and ways in which they just could cooperate as human beings who would like the same things for themselves, for their children's, for their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. One interesting, you know, there was one interesting point that they asked, you know, what makes you feel safe? And mm-hmm. and the Leverett group said that no one around in our town has a firearm. And in Kentucky, they said, what makes us feel safe is that everyone has a firearm. it's just, you know, it made them all laugh, you know, and they got to talk about what that means to them and why and what's mm-hmm. their history and who are they. And it was a very successful project. So indeed, language so important to us in, mm-hmm. in terms of cooperation. Mm-hmm. Dorothy, we've already gotten to another break. This is going to be a very quick month. Time. So, listeners, we're going to continue the conversation as soon as we get back.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Welcome back, listeners, to our month on cooperation. Dorothy, would you like to pick up where we left off?
Yes, I would just like to comment on the whole communication aspect that we were talking about before the break, because I've been struck recently by the fact that I've worked for years as part of a virtual team, starting with when doing lots of international consulting and using, you know, email as a major methodology of communicating back to the office, but in more recent years, working literally with people from a variety of different countries. And what I've realized, since we have some new team members who do not communicate regularly, is that being able to function effectively as a virtual team and trust what other team members are doing really depends on people communicating back, right? Yeah. If I send out an email, I need to hear back from people. And if I don't hear back, and I don't hear back relatively rapidly, then I start to wonder what's going on. You can make up all kinds of things. But it's not healthy for the ability of the team to work together in an effective way. So communication is really a key aspect. And one of the reasons, I think, is that it is part of how we sense or pick up the degree of respect that others have for us.
Mm, indeed. And you can imagine that if you were asking somebody a question or created a statement to somebody and they just stared at you blank face, if your email was an actual conversation, you'd think, mm-hmm. What's going on? Why are you not responding? So we've got to look at our sort of digital communications in the same way. It's easy not to do that. In fact, Dorothy, talk about growing from our collaborations. There were a few times that you said to me, hey, Steve, come on, I sent you an email. What's going on?
Right.
And I've learned. And actually, I grew from that as a part of this collaboration. And I now really do respond to nearly every email immediately, even if it's just to say, hey, I'll get back to you tomorrow or the next day. So thanks for that.
We had, I wonder if you could comment for a moment on an aspect of cooperation that people may not think about, and that is how our bodies come together, because you're very active in the esoteric healing field. And I mean, we need all of our cells and organs to cooperate with each other, right?
Absolutely. And our body is just this, it is just this cooperative it is a cooperative organism, and if we pay attention to our bodies, we can tell when aspects are not cooperating. You know, that then creates a distortion, or it creates dis-ease, right, within our system. And that can be in terms of stress with our mental body, it could be negative emotions, or we could be physically ill. Our body is built to generate on its own. Its intention is to create homeostasis, which is a state of equilibrium of the internal environment of the body. So it's constantly in this process of regulation, and there's feedback going on. It's this, not unlike life itself. It is dynamic and complex, and it is, you know, it's the vessel in which you operate from. So, you know, we need to get to learn the ways in which our mind affects our emotions affect our physical body. So, you know, we've got a nervous system that is constantly informing our physical body, that's informing our endocrine system to release certain hormones that will affect our physiology. So, you know, just to realize that you actually being here in a physical body is this wonderful dance of cooperation that's happening all the time. And, you know, we really owe it to ourselves to learn about the aspects that are trying to cooperate, pay attention when part of our system is off, but, and we feel it, you know, when we're stressed and our body starts to break down, you realize, well, I'm not cooperating on some level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it comes back to energy following thought. And, we've got to always look at the different aspects of ways in which, you know, we are either in resistance or we are in cooperation. And if our thoughts or our emotions are negative, we really are working away. We are working, you know, we're working against this this system that wants to cooperate and wants to be balanced, wants to, you know, be in a state of equilibrium. There's also, I also love within, you know, esoteric healing, which is a form of energy medicine. We are working with people off the body. So we're sensing energy with our hands and with our intuition and our, it's telepathic in a sort, in a way. And so I love that idea of communicating with another. If you've ever experienced somebody walking up behind you and you can sense that they're there, there is a cooperation. There are two energy systems coming together in a way and informing you of something. So it's this transfer of energy, of thought forms, even when it's thought forms from one to another, and form in the way of telepathy, sending someone a thought. And it also makes me think of morphic fields as we're talking about energy, that we're also shaped by the energy around us and the energy that is imprinted really within subtle energy. You know, I think of, I've got a male puppy and he's not around any other male dogs. And over time, he used to squat when he goes to the bathroom. And as he's gotten older, he now lifts his leg. Well, that's called a morphic field. And what that is there is an imprint that is actually exists as a sort of energetic memory that lets him know that, hey, dude, you're supposed to lift your leg when you go to the bathroom, because there's no real reason. It doesn't make it any easier. But it's part of the sort of morphogenetic field of the dog. And so we're always affected and in a sense want to cooperate with these impulses and with these patterns that exist within our reality, within our world itself. I also think of the ways in which we are influenced by, we saw in the election, in that tragedy that happened in Pittsburgh, speaking of energy, that as someone is around certain elements of rhetoric, you know, as we hear certain ideas, they actually sink into our system and they affect us on lots of levels, because it's all cooperating. You know, it's all registering. It's registering emotionally. It's registering physically. And that, so in a sense, these ideas are even a part of a morphic field that we are influenced by. So we've just got to be aware of where there is cooperation and where we want to sort of take charge of that. And make sure that we are building an egalitarian system biologically and socially.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, I'd like to build on that and to talk about some other different types of cooperation, Steve. Because, you know, when we think of cooperation, we often think only of we're doing it together at the same time, that simultaneity. But there are other forms that really are cooperative. You've mentioned some, but one we can think of as direct reciprocity. You know, you do a favor for me, I do a favor for you. There's a kind of a flow of the energy there, but we're cooperating with each other in terms of how that happens. Or it can be indirect, and that is, you know, I can do a favor for someone, not because they've done something for me, but because I see that they're helping lots of other people. And I want to be helpful to them so that they are, in turn, are able to help all of those other people. So that's more indirect. And then, of course, we have, you know, which was memorialized for us in a book and a movie, we have the concept of paying it forward. That you do something for me, and I consciously say that I will do something for someone else in need because you have done something for me. And that's another form of that cooperative energy. So I think, you know, there are lots of ways in which the energy plays out, but the basic concept underlying it, which I think, you know, we'll keep coming back to all month, is this idea of an egalitarian assumption, an assumption that both ourselves and the other are worthy of respect and worthy of being treated with dignity.
Mm. Yes, I love the concept of pay it forward. Here at Spearfire, we have our own program called Raise It Forward, where people can donate money so that that will go towards somebody in attending a retreat or a program that they can't afford. And even in terms of you know, speaking of morphic fields, I feel like every time we are cooperative and when we're not in resistance or whether it's conscious or unconscious, sort of creating that divisiveness through our resistance, that we are just adding to that morphic field of egalitarianism, which is the greater good, to know that we're generating patterns that then exist for other people to feel into and rely upon when they're trying to make a choice. So it's like pay it forward on the physical plane, right? Where we're literally doing a favor for another. But I believe that cooperation energetically actually, you know, exists as a pattern and we add to it. And, you know, we all can lean into that then. I think it moves out into the subtle realms in ways that affect us all.
Well, there's actually some very noticeable examples of that. One of them is called drafting. And I became aware of this in two ways. One is, you know, if you watch, you know, like birds flying, you know, the V formation, and, you know, so why do they choose that formation? Well, it's because they're able to draft off of the leader. It takes them less energy, and it actually takes less energy for the leader. But that was really reinforced for me in listening to my sister, who's a cyclist, and she and her husband both are cyclists, and they talk about drafting off of each other or off of others on their team, which so you have this the overall effect of exploiting the slipstream of the leader, which then reduces the energy that's needed by everybody in the group.
Nice, yeah. Unseen, but cooperative works so well, right? Dorothy, we're already at break, so hold that thought. I know you were just about to go on. We'll come back to that as soon as we have these words from sponsors.
Hi, I'm Barbara Scheidegger, clinical hypnotherapist and founder of Swiss Hypnotherapy. My goal is to help you to reach your goal, and this is a tip with purpose. Everybody wants it, and nobody has enough of it. But it comes to a point that you have to tell yourself, I can get more, I want more, I deserve more. I'm talking about money. More money, more money, more money. That's what people want. But what has to be done? Your thoughts have to change. That you can allow yourself to tell yourself, I have money. And I want more money. How much money? What is it? Put it out there. Write it down. What would you do with more money? How would you feel to have more money? I hope this tip helps you going through the day today. You can reach me at 323-999-4775 or at my website at swisshypnotherapy.com.
Are you your story? Or can you change your story? Can you change what you believe to be true about yourself and your circumstances as part of your healing journey? What if you were to change your expectations? What if you were to invite ease and cooperation into every day and then step back and see what happens? It might just be easier. I'm Megan Edge, and I hope that you'll join me on my new radio show, Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host Dr. Pat on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
Want to find out more about Megan Edge? Visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Hi, I'm Steve Kramer of Spirit Fire Radio, and I believe that meditation changes everything. It leads us in the direction of greater well-being, and that's a fact. I struggled with meditation for years. I understood the principles, but I found it hard to incorporate them into my everyday life.
Spirit Fire's meditation practice changed that. It's called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's taught in 14 steps. These are 14 tools that I can use in any moment, on and off the cushion. Steps like smile, flow, and ground of being support my clarity of mind while I'm navigating the ups and downs of modern life. That's why it's called the Practice of Living Awareness. If you'd like to add meditation to your daily experience, the Practice of Living Awareness is free, online, and it's suited for any level of practitioner. Visit spiritfire.com for more information. And be sure to check out Spirit Fire's meditation retreats in Western Massachusetts. It's all there at spiritfire.com. Welcome back, listeners. Dorothy, you wanted to say a few words about nature, right? Nature is this wonderfully cooperative organism, Mother Earth, right? Constantly trying to stay in balance and equilibrium through cooperating with all of her various parts, right?
Absolutely. And to me, I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, but reading The Hidden Lives of Trees was just so eye-opening to me. And there are a couple of concepts that I wanted to share in particular, Steve, and you may have others to add. But it's fascinating to me that trees are intelligent beings, which we tend not to think about. But they are aware that they survive better. They survive and thrive when they have a consistent local climate. And so what they will do is they will nourish other trees, purposely nourish other trees who might be viewed as competitors or who might be aging out, you know, and becoming very weak, because they know that if they keep the density of the cover at a certain level without lots of holes, that the climate will stay consistent and keep the ground from drying out or getting too wet. And so they purposely undertake activities to, including, you know, intertwining roots and slipping nourishment to each other, so that they can create this healthy web of trees that allows everyone to thrive. And it's clear that they function with an awareness that they are as strong as the weakest link in the group. And so it's to all of their benefit to strengthen that weak link. Isn't that interesting?
It's so interesting. And trees, I mean, we couldn't exist without trees. It's a fact. And just even the cooperation that happens between human beings and trees, that they are constantly releasing oxygen into the air, that we are constantly breathing oxygen from the air, and we are releasing carbon dioxide, which they are absorbing. You know, it's just right there is this life-affirming cooperative act that is just so necessary. And it's a part of, you know, we're constantly breathing. We're constantly in relation. Yes, trees are amazing. Living on a mountaintop, I spend quite a bit of time amongst the trees and so appreciate their presence. Indeed. Dorothy, I wanted to just mention, you know, and we'll probably mention this throughout the month, this idea of we've talked about collaboration and cooperation. And I keep thinking of the word, of the prefix co, and that it means, you know, that it means together and in common and mutually. So there's so many words that begin with co that have such a good feeling about them, right? Co-creation, we mentioned, and co-production. And then there's this using co as meaning a partnership or an equality, like you're a co-founder of an organization, or as we mentioned, that Spirit Fire is a collaboration, or for instance, you're a co-pilot, you're both manning the plane together. Or we think of to co-extend, which means to the same or similar degree. So this idea of co, which as I looked it up, comes from Latin, it's short from com, which we think of complement, complete, common, compatible, comprehensive, community. So they're all such good words. I just thought it was even a co-op. When we think of, you know, we get a lot of our food from the co-op, which is a cooperative market that is owned by all of the people who shop there and make the decisions about the direction in which that business will go. So just such a wonderful word to say, all of these co-words.
Absolutely. Well, and if we think a little bit more about, you know, the benefits that we get from cooperation, which I think extends to a number of these other co-words, we've mentioned some, but not all of these. When we cooperate with others, one of the consequences is that it reinforces positive traits in ourselves. It reinforces curiosity and openness and trust. And valuing of others. Cooperation is absolutely essential in building any relationship and in creating an atmosphere of safety, reinforcing that sense that we can make a difference. We may not feel that individually we can make a difference, but certainly when we work cooperatively with others, we can make a difference.
And I think if you feel into it of times when you have been incredibly cooperative, that it generates generosity, that we feel like we want to give to others. We've said on several shows that it's a fact that people feel better when they give to others rather than when they receive. And so you can see, as long as when you experience cooperation, generosity is the result. And I also think that there's a component of teaching and learning that happens simultaneously, because as we cooperate, we realize that, you know, there's beauty in our diversity. We actually all have something to give that is unique and something to teach, and we've got something to learn. We've got something to receive. So, you know, it's not just to sort of, we think of, I'll cooperate so that I can, you know, as a means to an end to get there quicker. You know, but really it is, as we've said before, it's the process that is so rewarding, and what we can learn along the way beyond what we will create as a result of a collaboration or a cooperation mm-hmm. with a project, indeed.
Absolutely. This starts to touch on something that I think we'll probably go into some more next week or the week after, and that is that there are aspects of cooperation that can be very challenging. And one of them, you know, just as you say it, you know, or I say, it builds trust, it builds valuing others. It can also be endangered, if you will, or it can feel dangerous if we don't trust the other person. Yeah. You know, we need to, in order to cooperate openly and freely, we need to trust that someone else is not going to learn our weaknesses, so to speak, and then exploit them. Because in order to cooperate effectively, we need to be honest and open with others.
Yes.
And then along that same line, you know, there are certain pockets in our society that view cooperation as being weak, you know, that in order to show strength, you have to show that you can dominate someone else, which is not going to lead to cooperation. And whereas if you are cooperating, if you are trying to find a way to work together towards the common good, that you are giving in somehow. You know, there's this negative connotation to some people. But we can't move forward unless we're able to cooperate with each other. We've seen that in the U.S. government, you know, being the stalemate that is created when people will not work across the aisle, will not trust across the aisle. And so that's, I think, another thing that's challenging about cooperation is being able to move beyond that, what I would think of as a very limited view of, you know, it's mine, it's got to be my way, and really learn to live with an open heart, embracing that there is a way of being in the world, which we call, you know, the common good, which may not be exactly what I see. It may not be exactly what I think should happen. But I can tell you, Steve, that if I think back on my life, I can think of times when if things had worked out exactly the way I wanted them to, I would not have enjoyed some of the wonderful experiences that came from my being willing to try something that was different than exactly how I thought things should be.
Trust. Yes, our culture certainly reinforces the individual. It's that balance of knowing what one has to give, but being willing to give it to the group for the greater good, right? That balance of individual and group. Dorothy, we've got to wrap this show up. We're going to talk next week about the myth of competition. So again, that which really is also challenges cooperation, as we were talking about in this segment. So I look forward to that, Dorothy. And listeners, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you, Dorothy.
It's been a pleasure. Take care, everybody.
See you next week.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.